Well, hello, and welcome to the Cory Doctorow podcast. I'm Cory Doctorow, and I read my science fiction stories to you. This is part two of the reading of Power Punctuation, a story that originally appeared in Starlight Volume 3 in 2001. I'm just getting ready to go to Portland, Oregon. I'm going to be the guest of honor at OriCon this weekend, which is very exciting. And I just found out I get to have dinner with Ursula Le Guin, which is like dream come true. I'm not going to do much intro today because I'm in a hurry. I got to pack a suitcase. So without further ado, here is the story. Hi, Mom. I'm real sorry to hear about Buddy. I know he must feel sad. I didn't think that Carla was a spy either, but now that she's been arrested, I guess that Buddy should feel lucky that he didn't stay married to her long enough to have little spy babies. This is my third week as special vice president. I'm doing well for myself. Crazy Tony is now my assistant. He sits at a smaller desk in my office with me and Rehnquist, and Rehnquist asks him the same crazy questions he asks me, but Tony's answers are always weird. He has been in management stream since the second grade, and he has read all kinds of TV that I have never even heard of. Rehnquist doesn't know about it either. He says that Tony is paranoid, which means that he thinks that everyone is out to get him. Tony said, "Even paranoids have enemies," and Rehnquist laughed so much I thought he would bust. Some days, Rehnquist is very sad, and on those days, we just watch movies. I've seen My Fair Lady, Pygmalion, Trading Places, The Prince and the Pauper, and a whole bunch more. They are all about poor people like you and me who become rich and powerful like Rehnquist. Mom, I think it means that Rehnquist wants me to be in charge! I haven't said anything, but I am trying to get ready. I am learning word power at night with the TV in my apt. I am not using it yet because I want to make sure that I am very good at it before I do. I told Rehnquist about Vasquez and the new guy, and do you know what he did? He sat down at my desk and he opened up Vasquez's file on my TV and he gave him all excellence in all of his appraisal categories. Can you believe it? There's nothing he can't do. He said, "You gotta give the working stiffs a Christmas present now and then, right, Jap?" I said, "Sure." But I don't know. The performance appraisals are supposed to be scrupulously fair. That's one of my power words. It means very. It doesn't seem right to just treat them like a bunch of numbers. It's Vasquez's whole life. It's good that Rehnquist gave him all excellence, because that means he'll probably be promoted this year. Maybe he'll even end up a dispatcher or even a trainer. But what if Rehnquist had decided to put down needs improvements? It would have ruined Vasquez for the rest of his life. It's full of arbitrary. That means it doesn't make sense. I haven't talked to Rehnquist about this. I don't want to seem stupid. Tony and I talked about it on the slidewalk, though. He said that I was very stupid if I still believed that performance appraisals meant anything. He said the only appraisal that counts is the one they get from reading your mind. I laughed and called him paranoid. He said, "I take that shit from Rehnquist, but I don't have to take it from an ignorant farm boy like you." I got scared for a second, but then I remembered that I was Tony's boss. "Tony," I said, "I should fire you on the spot." That was from one of the movies we watched. Then he looked scared and he said, "Sorry, sorry." And I said, "What makes you think anyone could read your mind?" And he said, "What makes you think they can't?" I said, "Well, if Rehnquist could read my mind, he would have known that I was going to call security the day we met at Finance 38. Tony said, "Rehnquist is just a puppet of the ones in charge. They pull his strings and he dances for them." I said I didn't understand, and Tony looked at me with pity. He said, "The ones in charge are running all the cities, Microsoft in England, and BBDO, and Red Stripe. They know everything that's going on. This is all a game for them." And I said, "Boy, you don't know anything. BBDO is our biggest enemy. Filegator is locked in a death struggle with them. It said so on the news this morning." Jap, Tony said, "We're not fighting BBDO. Filegator is. We're riding down a slidewalk back home. Can't you tell the difference between fighting and riding a slidewalk?" I said, "Of course I can. That's full of sophistry." Another power word, which means cow patties. "We're part of Filegator. Filegator is fighting BBDO. That means we're fighting BBDO. Ergo, that means so there." Tony laughed and said, "That's where you're wrong. Filegator is just the long arm of one of the ones in charge. He probably slept with the wife of the one in charge who runs BBDO, and now they're fighting it out." I laughed at Tony and said, "You keep talking about the ones in charge. Everything you say is stupid unless you believe in the ones in charge. What makes you think that there are any ones in charge?" "There has to be," Tony said. "Who else is running the show?" "Rehnquist is," I said. Tony looked at me like I was stupid. I'm pretty sick of him looking at me like that. Tony said, "If Rehnquist is running the show, then how come he has time to waste on you?" I wanted to say something, but I didn't know what. Tony sure makes me angry. I got off the slidewalk and went home and wrote you this letter. Hi, Mom. Gosh, poor Buddy. How can he be a spy? I played with him all my life. I never saw him being a spy. He'd have to be pretty sneaky to be a spy. I don't think he's a spy. I'm sure that the manager of his disciplinary hearing will figure out that he couldn't be a spy. I am learning power punctuation now. I have been using my power words with Rehnquist all week, but he doesn't seem to notice. I think that if I started sending him written reports that are power punctuated, he'll notice that I'm really making effortful progress. Today, Rehnquist sent Tony back to his old office to bring up all their secure document storage containers. It was the first time that Rehnquist and I were alone together since Tony was made my assistant, and I had a private talk with Rehnquist. I said, "Are you really in charge?" Rehnquist stared at me. "What is that supposed to mean?" he asked. I said, "Tony says that if you were, quote, in charge, quote, that you wouldn't have time to squander with us. He says, quote, you are just a puppet of the, quote, ones in charge, quote, quote, quote." Rehnquist smiled and shook his head. "Tony thinks he's pretty smart, huh?" I smiled back at him because I thought Tony was crazy. "He sure does," I said. Rehnquist said, colon, "Well, even, quote, paranoids, quote, have enemies, exclamation point." I said, "Wow, exclamation point, do you mean, colon, quote, Tony is right, question mark, quote, exclamation point?" He said, "Well, no one except weirdos like me would want to know what's in Tony's brain, so I don't think he really has to worry about anyone reading his mind. But he's right about one thing, colon, even though I'm in charge of Phylogator, I'm not necessarily running the show. I have investors. Pray God you never meet them, Jap. They'd eat you alive." I said, "But they taught me in basic that you started Phylogator with just one truck and a shredder, and that you shrewdly parlayed your meager holdings into a powerful organization by strategically deploying your human resources." He laughed. "Strategically deploying human resources? I paid the mob to scare the S-star-star-T out of the guys driving the other trucks." I thought that the drivers of the other trucks must have been pretty gutless if they let someone scare them away from their appointed responsibilities, but I didn't say so. Rehnquist looked at me like he was sorry he'd said what he said. "Oh, I didn't hurt anyone. Just put the fear of God in them. Then I picked up their roots, borrowed some cash, bought some more trucks, and the rest is history. I just sort of stumbled along with it best as I could. Sometimes I wonder how it all happened. One minute you're shredding papers in Toronto, the next you're buying the place. I can't see that I was a whole lot smarter than any of the other guys who were doing the same thing. I did design the uniforms, though. They were pretty sharp, nicer than the potato sacks you guys wear these days. I like my uniform, Mom, and I wear it with pride. If it had been Crazy Tony making fun of my uniform, I would maybe have hit him, but when Rehnquist said it, I just had to look like I understood and smile at him. I said, 'You've done a lot more than design the uniforms. You run the show. You said so.' He looked at me like I was a little kid and shook his head. If I was running the show, would I be amusing myself by pulling random quality audits on the trucks? Crazy Tony walked in then. He looked at us and said, 'What? What are you two talking about?' Rehnquist said, 'Jap here was just explaining that you don't think I'm in charge.' Rehnquist looked scared, and Tony looked scared, and Rehnquist winked at me. Tony looked like he wanted to kill me. Tony said, 'Do you really want to discuss this? Here, in this place, with all the eyes and ears in this room?' Rehnquist laughed and laughed and laughed. 'Eyes and ears. Tony, you're beautiful. You twisty little weirdo. A real laugh riot.' Tony's face got red, and he looked fit to bust. 'Fine, then. Let's talk. Talk about the Calabresi, and the gnomes, and the tongs, and the masons, and the posses. How'd you like that?' Rehnquist tried to stop laughing, but he couldn't. 'Jap, there's nothing more dangerous than a little knowledge.' He didn't say it to me, though. He said it to Tony. Tony was so angry, he shook. Just then, Rehnquist's phone rang. He said, 'McBride here,' which is how he always answers. Then he said, 'Yes, sir, that's fabulous.' He covered the bottom of the phone and said, 'Why don't you guys take the rest of the day off, huh?' And then he opened the door and sent us out. When I got home, my TV was already on with a special bulletin. BBDNO was our sister city, and the two of us were fighting a life-and-death battle with Microsoft. There was also a message from Rehnquist, and attached to it was a copy of another old movie, 1984. It was boring. Hi, Mom. I can't believe it. They gave Buddy life? Geez, I'm going to talk to Rehnquist about this. This is ridiculous. Today was Tuesday, so I was on the truck with Vasquez. I got to the garage nice and early, and my watch congratulated me. It kind of bothered me. I guess I'm just getting used to working in my office with the watch switched off. By the time we made our first stop at HR 102, I was ready to throw my watch out the window. It had told me 8 times how great I was when I got to the garage, when I did my safety check, when I stopped at 3 red lights, when I backed up to the document disposal dock, when I cleared security, and when I lifted the boxes with my legs instead of my back. To tell you the truth, it made me feel pretty stupid. I felt like I was a puppy getting patted on the head. By lunch, my watch had given me 57 positive feedbacks. I mentioned it to Vasquez. He said, "I don't know what you're complaining about. It beats having it shout at you all the time. It just means you're doing all right. When I'm out with a new guy, this thing never shuts up. It just yammers on and on about how late we are, how many more pickups we have to do, what percent of our pickups we've been late for. I got so mad last week, I shouted at it, 'Don't tell me, tell the retard who's driving.'" We both laughed at that. I said, "Sure, it's better to be loved off than it is to get chewed out, but don't you feel like you're an idiot having a machine telling you what a great job you're doing?" My watch said that I was lowering morale and I should stop. I got so angry, Mom, I told it to mind its own business, and it said it was minding its own business, and did I want it to connect me with a maintenance operator to evaluate its judgment? I never mouthed off to my watch before. The idea of talking to a real person about it scared me, but I remembered that even though I was driving a truck, I was also a special vice president, and that made me almost everybody's boss. I said, "Yes!" Vasquez looked at me like I'd gone nuts. A few seconds later, a new voice came out of my watch. "How can I help you, Mr. Whitehead?" The voice was smooth and oily, like the man from physical plant who used to come around to collect the rent back home. All of a sudden, I didn't know what to say. I said, "My watch is irritating me." The voice said, "Have you developed a rash? Is there visible chafing?" I said, "No, it's irritating me mentally. It never shuts up." The voice didn't say anything for a while. Then it said, "Well, from my records, I see that you have a 98% positive feedback index. In fact, your watch hasn't given you any corrective feedbacks in a week, with the exception of a mild correction about anti-morale speculations." I felt stupid, like one of those guys in basic who carped about every little thing. I said, "Well, I'm just getting tired of having a machine telling me when I'm right and wrong. I can figure that out on my own." The voice said, "I see." And then it didn't say anything. I tried to wait until the voice said something else, but the quiet made me very nervous. I said, "I don't mean to be rude or anything. I am very conscientious about my job. It is just that I feel like a moron or something, always having the watch tell me what I'm doing." I knew that I wasn't expressing myself very well, but I couldn't remember any of my power words just then. "It bugs me, you know." The voice said, "I'm sorry, but I'm afraid that's not my business. I'm in maintenance. If you have a concern about HR policy, you need to take it up with them." I thought about my HR sergeant in basic and tried to imagine telling him that I didn't want my watch to talk to me anymore, and I nearly jumped out of my skin. "That's okay," I said. "My lunch is almost over. I'll try them after my shift." The voice said, "Thank you for calling maintenance. Have a nice day." And then my watch told me it was time to get in the truck and start driving again. Vasquez kept looking at me all day like I was some kind of crazy.